Beto O'Rourke was a guest on The View this morning as part of the relaunch of his struggling campaign, and he announced a bold move to increase his popularity, a brand new website, JoeBiden.com.
Elizabeth Warren announced that she will not promote Fox News by participating in a town hall like other Democratic candidates have done. In response, Fox News has announced that Elizabeth Warren is organizing a socialist abortion clinic run by undocumented immigrants.
Meghan Markle reportedly used to have a cat named Archie. She says she named the baby Archie as a little reminder to not leave him on an airplane.
President Trump attributes the Red Sox.
That's the one.
President Trump attributes the Red Sox current winning streak to their recent visit to the White House. It makes a lot of sense since after meeting President Trump, most people want to hit something with a baseball bat.
California's biggest utility company plans to cut electricity this summer on highly windy days to avoid causing another wildfire. In other words, their plan for preventing a wildfire is to make everyone light a whole bunch of candles.
Missy Elliott received an honorary doctorate from Boston's Berklee School of Music. After the ceremony, she took off her cap, put it down, flipped it, and reversed it.
And finally, Donald Trump Jr. has struck a deal with the Senate Intelligence Committee for what is being described as a limited interview. Of course, anyone who's ever met Don Jr. in person knows that pretty much everything he does can be described as limited. The Trump Report starts now!
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yeah, oh my gosh, I forgot about the new music. Welcome to the Trump Report. I'm Christian Blatt. We have the whole gang here, joined as so often, usually, by the one and only Chelsea Galicia.
Hello there.
And on the other end of the desk, my joke partner in crime. In crime as well, though. Tamara Brown.
Hello.
And at the far end of the desk, the one, the only, Scott Moore.
Hey, guys.
And a special guest in studio, Alicia Krauss, the contributor for the Daily Wire. Thank you. Yeah. For sitting here and being on our almost comfortable couch.
Yeah, it's a little awkward.
Yeah, because you have to avoid one of the three springs.
Well, it's also like, this is not too much IPA. It's my 8-month pregnant belly and my legs and heels.
It's not well designed for non-pregnant.
I mean, I used to do morning radio, and this is a much nicer studio than that, so thank you.
As someone who also did morning radio, I would certainly agree. So there's so much to discuss, but I feel like I need to start with something very important. Tamara, how was Del Taco's imitation meat taco? Just because we talked about it like last week, so I saw you tweet that you had it.
It was so good. I thought that they had made a mistake and gave me real meat. It was,
I mean,
it was
honestly,
so good.
And Chelsea, you're going to bet. What better review could there be than that? Like, I thought they made a mistake and gave me real meat.
Yep, absolutely. I had it too last weekend, and it was good. I hadn't been to Del Taco or eaten Del Taco since college. It took me back.
Which was like last year?
15 years ago. Thanks, Scott. Yes, I mean,
well,
maybe that's why Beyond Meat's stock is sitting at like around 80, while Uber is at like 40.
The interesting thing, though, is because the last time I ate at Del Taco, I was convinced that my actual meat had been replaced by imitation meat. So,
that's Taco Bell.
You're right.
Because Del Taco, even before the Beyond Meat, they were the vegetarian friendly chain because they don't put lard in their beans. So when you order just a bean burrito from Del Taco, it's purely not, there's no animal byproduct in it. Like if you order
a
bean burrito in Taco Bell, it has lard in it.
I will never be there. There's no lard. I can't eat anything without lard in
it. I'm from the Bible Belt. I mean, it has to have pig fat and everything.
See, now you understand. So much to talk about. I don't even know where to begin. I mean, obviously, we talked about the most important thing with the imitation meat, as it were.
Hey.
What? It's imitation. Is it not?
It's plant-based meat.
What is the dictionary?
Is it like soy milk?
I don't mean this at all. It just sounds funny in my head. You're plant-based meat. Anyway, we're going to start off with
I was just going to look up the dictionary definition of meat.
Is the definition?
It is animal flesh that is eaten as food. So meat shouldn't even be in the title.
That's true.
It's marketing genius that they include meat in there.
Right. It's like how...
This is the animal agriculture's position that these products should not be
called. But that's
meat.
Like soy milk, and that was a whole thing that the dairy farmers were fighting about, is that it's not really milk when it's not from an
animal. And it's why we have things called processed cheese food, because it's not actually cheese.
Anyway, Velveeta!
Well, yeah, welcome to the Dairy Report. Yeah. Thanks to everybody.
By the way, if this show was based in Wisconsin, that would have huge ratings.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. We'd have the cheese curd polling segment. We'd have a lot
don't
of
worry, if you're lactose intolerant, you're still welcome here.
Yeah, no, we would figure it out. Although you'd get kicked out of Wisconsin, probably. So one of the things I wanted to talk about was Russia. Apparently there's still a Russia. Now, Mike Pompeo talked to Putin, and they're trying to make sure that everything's on the same page, because things are getting heated with Iran. Now, Alicia, I believe you said you saw Pompeo speak just, was it last week?
Saturday night.
So yeah. Where was this, and what did he have to say?
Well, I'm a nerd, so I was a Lincoln Fellow at the Claremont Institute back in 2016. Are y'all familiar with what the Claremont Institute is? Okay, so it's a it's a conservative think tank, conservative libertarian think tank. Much of, things you learn about things like John Locke and esotericism when you go there.
Mm-hmm.
So super interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I was the dumbest in my fellowship because I was the only college dropout. Everyone was like an Ivy League attorney. So I was a Lincoln Fellow in 2016 down in Orange County at Claremont McKenna at the Claremont Institute, and it was their 40th anniversary gala. And they honored Secretary of State Pompeo this year, and my husband and I used the excuse to dress up and go out and kind of have a date night and a free dinner. And he was, of course, the keynote as well. And he, actually, the Federalist and a few other outlets have put up transcript of his speech. I was very pleased with how direct he was, even naming Putin when he talked about these are the things we're not going to let Russia do.
And so it's a very strong stance, that we're not going to get pushed around by...
He said, he clearly said he's like, they're not going to be an issue. We're not going to let any interference in our elections. And he went after China a lot too, as well. And talked about, we're not going to let China essentially steal billions of dollars from the American industries, specifically tech industries, because they keep stealing our tech. And Russia and China are buddy-buddy, much like they are with Iran and Venezuela. I mean, you have those four nations, and if you can get one of them in check, I think it helps you with the other three.
Well, the interesting thing about the strong stance on China, which we'll talk about momentarily, is, unless I'm mistaken, don't we still owe them, like, trillions of dollars of our debt? They've bought up our debt. So I feel like we probably shouldn't take any kind of stance to them for on anything. I think we
just
should
just let them keep stealing.
Well, I mean, they're not stealing it. It's like they paid for it. You know, they invested in our technology by buying our debt.
But they're so flat. You understand that they're flat out stealing.
Oh, no, I do. But it's like they shouldn't have to steal it.
Patented ideas.
Yes, no, I 100% agree.
So you're saying to pay them back, we should just let them have it?
We should just let them have it, yeah. And then it's like, I mean, I don't know. I think that President O'Rourke probably won't take this stand. I just wanted to say those words.
Tamara didn't laugh, by the way. Tamara didn't think that was funny. Has not been stabbed in his sleep by his wife because the things he says. But anyway.
Comedy comes from surprise, and it seems reasonable to me.
The best face, though. That was great.
What do you think? I'll start with Chelsea. We'll work our way down. Do you think that Pompeo is taking a strong stance against Putin, or do you feel like maybe they're friendlier than they should be?
I'm not even sure that it matters, because if Trump isn't on the same page and says something or does something different, is in a different mood, really, who cares? He could be strong, and I, it sounds like I would have agreed with the things that he said, but does it really matter unless Trump is committed to the same position?
I think you could, if I may.
Sure.
I think that you could also look at the way that John Bolton and Pompeo are kind of operating in their roles, a lot like how Nikki Haley operated in her role at the UN, where she was incredibly harsh, specifically on the Assad regime and the Putin regime. I use the word regime because I think that they're both evil dictators and they deserve that title. And you didn't always see the same rhetoric come out of the White House, but the policies that were implemented were pretty harsh, especially compared to the Bush and the Obama administrations. So I agree with you. I know that the Russian media, Russian government, Putin, and all of his, you know, oligarchs are watching what Trump says and does. But if he backs up Pompeo by not reneging on what Pompeo says and does, there's our answer right there.
So we'll just, like the president says all the time, we'll see. We'll just have to see. We'll wait and see.
Do you think, Tamara, that President Trump feels it's important to take a strong stance against Russia in particular for any particular reason? Do you find it disingenuous, is what I'm trying to ask you? That do you think he, you know, we talked last week, he was on the phone with Putin for 90 minutes last week, and I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure that they mostly talked about the new season of American Idol mm-hmm. and 90 Day Fiancé. I'm pretty sure that's what they talked about the whole time.
Was that before or after his hockey trip?
Yeah, I was just going to say, do you think that's why he didn't notice the carpet?
Beef. By the way, you've reminded me that was media that I wish I had pulled. I completely forgot that I wanted to see that.
So good.
And before, you know, obviously now I'm filibustering, but I feel like when there's a clip like that, it never shows up on Russian TV.
Of course not. Somebody died
over that.
That's what I was going to say. Whoever put that red carpet down.
Someone the is entire now stadium.
They were rolled in that red carpet. Yeah.
The entire stadium has been blinded, has been mysteriously succumbed to some sort of eye disease that they can no longer see.
So the short way to rephrase the question, Tamara, is basically, how would you characterize President Trump's relationship with Vladimir Putin?
I would say, what's their relationship?
Yeah.
Oh,
are they BFFs or just besties?
Identical cousins. They're, Felix and, what's the other one? Felix and Oscar. Yeah. Great guy, Putin. That's what the relationship is.
So that you think that that it's just a sort of a mutual, like they're just like being guys, and I think President Trump likes being liked, mm-hmm. regardless of who it is, whether it's mm-hmm. whether it's Kim Jong Un or
Erdogan. That's 100%
true. With Erdogan, he does the mm-hmm. same. Yeah. Even with Trudeau. Like, who he called a sissy man or whatever.
He still wants him to like him.
Like, he still wants him to like him. And when Trudeau comes to the White House or Macron or Erdogan, like, it's everyone. He's just like, oh, he kind of becomes a chameleon in a way.
Mm-hmm. And early on, China was very good at using that to his advantage when he did visit China and they literally rolled out the red carpet for him and had children, you know, waving out of school and waving flags and saying Trump, 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 and they were purposely doing that to stroke his ego.
They did that to the Obama administration, by the way, though too.
You misspoke, by the way, Tamara. When you said that the kids were out of school, you meant out of the factory that they work in. I've been to China. I just wanted to put that up.
It wasn't the country that he went to. I mean, it wasn't like the rural.
Oh,
you know.
Okay. Scott, we're talking a lot about the relationship between President Trump and Russia. Do you feel, let's put it this way, I'm going to ask it a different way. If you're Mike Pompeo, and maybe one day you will be.
My dream.
We've already talked about you running for president, exactly. So who knows what happens.
Would it be the 23rd
he
you know,
is from
Democratic
California,
candidate.
Yeah. So if you're from California,
yeah.
I mean.
See, that's.
I'll just be the 23rd candidate, yeah.
Do you think it's worth. Is it easier to make strong statements when you know that, like, it doesn't matter, I don't have to back them up, you know?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, until we actually see otherwise, it's more talk than action, and now we have to see, like we're saying, we'll wait and see, like, what happens with Trump, but I think the main concern is we still haven't really focused on the voting issues that it's everybody, all the politicians, yeah. It's like, we keep kind of skirting around it and talking about no collusion or collusion or this or that, but until we're really collectively talking about how we're really protecting the elections coming up next year, I feel like it is just more.
Yeah, well, just to interject, I was reading a story today that they found, you know, some more interference
in Florida,
of mm-hmm. course, because. I don't know, Scott. I know you're from Florida originally.
Florida man?
Originally. Yeah. He is actually Florida man. Most of those stories are about him.
They are usually about me, yeah.
Can we take away their voting just in national elections? It's just because there's always they're always making trouble.
Well, and everything's always so close, so, I mean,
that's true.
Saying it that way, yeah. Christian makes them sound like the little rascals.
kind of are.
Florida. Yeah. 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 Niggy.
They're a bunch of alfalfa. Yeah. So, I'm sorry, what were you going to say, Chelsea?
Well, I was going to just just going to say that Alicia saying that Mike Pompeo made reference to the Russian interference mm-hmm. and sort of bowing to that mm-hmm. there will be none, although I don't know if he gave you any details about how he planned to do that.
I'm pretty sure that that's probably not information that's going to go out to the masses.
But you could, we're fighting it on this front and this front, mm-hmm. and
I think the biggest front that it needs to be fought on, and this is why I'm fine for. I'm usually kind of about subpoenas and congressional subpoenas, and they hold no legal power. It's not the same as if you get subpoenaed to go down to the LA courthouse for something like a criminal case.
Right. So if one of us gets subpoenaed,
subpoenaed. In the past four administrations, you've had members of the executive branch that have been subpoenaed and they don't show. Eric Holder, anyone, during the whole Benghazi investigation that went on and on and on. All of that to say, I'm totally fine with Mark Zuckerberg getting subpoenaed, because the biggest problem that we saw that has been brought up by Republicans and Democrats is the social media infiltration by hackers and groups in Russia pretending to be Americans, left, right, and center, to sow discourse and real fake news on a social media platform that's used by millions of Americans and multi-millions of people in the entire world. That's something that needs to be investigated. And those private companies, I think, should answer to what are they doing to protect their individual users' privacies, and what are they doing to protect the overall security of their platforms to make sure faux groups like this don't have the power in 2020 that they had in 2016.
Do you feel the concern over Russian interference is the bipartisan issue that it ought to be, or is it just the Democrats are being louder about it because they didn't win that election? Or
I think that they're being louder about it because they didn't win the election, and I actually think that there are some very strong voices about the issue on the right. Ted Cruz has brought it up, Ben Sasse has brought it up, Marco Rubio has brought it up, even Rand Paul has brought it up. You just don't typically hear those voices on the mainstream media or over at Vox.com when they're talking about these specific issues.
Sorry to interrupt. I think it doesn't register as much because they're not in the administration or considered close allies, Cruz and the president clearly have Rubio.
They're definitely friends.
And that is an ally, Lindsey Graham, has brought it up.
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham has brought it up a lot. And Lindsey Graham is definitely considered an ally of the White House now.
Well, now, yes. Now,
but,
yes, he is.
The thing about that is Lindsey Graham, there's so many
versions
of him. A lot of things that Lindsey Graham says overshadows any sort of agreement that I may have with him about whatever he said about private interference in social media is far overshadowed by his meltdown at the Kavanaugh hearing. So it's things like that where things that I could maybe potentially see eye to eye with him on get buried.
But isn't that every person in politics?
No. People like Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio.
There's a lot of people. You're obviously coming from the left, but being someone that comes from the right, there's people on the left that I'm like, oh yeah, they can say something that I agree with. Like things on tariffs or Chinese, interference or Russian interference, I can hear what Bernie Sanders says about it and be like, yeah, he's accurate on this issue, but I don't agree with him on every other issue. But I don't think that that should discredit him on the one issue.
Mm-hmm. But that one issue that you do agree with him on is probably also given the equally smaller media attention, just as you're saying it's...
No, I'm saying that when Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden says something about Russian interference, it gets headlines on Jake Tapper and Anderson Cooper. When Marco Rubio and Ben Sasse say it, it doesn't get the mainstream media headlines.
I have seen it.
Yeah,
I have.
Well, not to the same extent that it is when a Democratic presidential candidate or, Nancy Pelosi says something.
In terms of agreement, just to jump over to China, surprisingly, Chuck Schumer says, yeah, I think Trump should really be tough on this with China. Which to me, I'm just like, he's playing some kind of game, right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't actually mean that. Or, I don't know, Scott, do you think he actually agrees?
No, I think it was more playing the game because he's like, the more that Trump digs himself into this tariff thing and, taking care of farmers means it makes him look bad. Because we saw, how the stocks did yesterday. And, so I think for him it is a game. It's like he's egging him on to...
So you think that, we've already referenced The Odd Couple, so we don't think that they're going to be doing a production of The Sunshine Boys at some point anytime soon? Because I would have bought tickets for that.
No, at one point I might have thought they would have, both being from New York State and New York City and having maybe some similarities there, but no.
I feel like both of them know each other so well. They probably both know like three or four things about the other. It's like, if I ever said this out loud, you know, you'd definitely. Be over.
And they're in the same circles to some degree. From, you know,
I mean, Trump donated to his campaign and held fundraisers for him. They're both like that New Yorker style politician.
Exactly. That's where the similarities are. But I just think now it's.
So you think that he doesn't actually think that this is the right stance for China? What do you think, Alicia, about this idea that Schumer is at least publicly agreeing with Trump? Are you like Scott? You don't buy it?
I'm cross conspiracy corner for a moment.
Yeah.
I'm like Scott. I'm not really buying it. And I think that he knows that if he ingratiates himself to the president, I mean, we've seen him do this with other things where they're trying to make deals. With the White House, Schumer was willing to negotiate. Pelosi was not, and that's kind of Chuck's game that he does.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, and it's kind of that good cop, bad cop leadership that you see happening with those two specifically on the Hill.
I don't want to get too bogged down in the policy and the numbers, but Chelsea, do you think this is a smart approach to take on China?
The tariff
war. Yeah, sorry, I probably should have used that word at some point in the past 25 minutes.
Or you could be like a conservative and just call it what it is, which is a tax.
Yeah, sure, why? That's fair. We could call it a tax.
I mean, why is that? Why is it a conservative want to call it a tax? Because it is. I've been wondering that the whole time. Why don't we call it a tax or anything?
Because only Congress is supposed to be able to raise taxes, so we give things that are similar but different a different name, so that you don't need congressional.
And also, it really is a tax.
And also, international things like that. You call.
It's a specific
something
kind.
I wish
we would find another word, because I do think this is such an important issue that even though we're hearing about it in the news right now, but I feel like the average person really isn't getting as fired up about China, and the reason is because I don't know if people realize what tariffs are. Like, I don't think it's.
Well, and it hasn't affected them yet either.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's also much like, I think, a lot of the language of the Russia investigation. People are like, yeah, I care about it, but they knew nothing about it. I think that if you ask the average American voter, especially in the Bible Belt or the Rust Belt, you know, even Democratic primary voters, what do you know about this, you know, tariff war with China? They're not going to understand it to this level that people, you know, policy wonks up on the Hill do.
Mm-hmm. Well, Larry Kudlow.
It's hard to break it down into that, you know, average American speak.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, ironically, you know, Larry Kudlow has said of Donald Trump that the president doesn't fully understand how tariffs work. And probably he was referring to the part about it's not the Chinese that pay them when we put tariffs on Chinese products. It's we who pay them, because when people import stuff from China, they generally pass along the increased cost to the end consumer, which is us. And at that point, when companies don't want to soften the blow, they don't want to take the loss from these tariffs, and they start passing it down to us, then people will become very interested and more eager to understand how this works and get upset about it. And
I don't even know that they'll be eager to understand how it works. They'll just be like, whose fault is this?
That's a good point.
Which is politics in general, which is why the first person to the punch is typically the winner.
Well, the people who are at least somewhat aware of what's going on are the farmers, and President Trump is pushing for new bailouts for the farmers because I don't know, I think a couple of farmers are going to need to vote for him if he's going to get reelected. So obviously you want to look out for the farmers. Not that everybody shouldn't look out for the farmers.
And the farmers and the cowmen should always be friends.
Right. I mean, exactly.
Did anyone get that? Did anyone? Mm-mm. Scott? Oh my gosh. Rodgers and Hammerstein, guys.
Yeah.
Oklahoma.
Oh.
I did Oklahoma in middle school.
It was one of those ones where I'm like, I can't quite place it, so I'm just gonna you know, roll with it. So obviously, I don't know how impartial, but also important do you think that, you know, an issue that directly affects farmers? I mean, is this, these are Trump's people? I mean, is that, am I overstating something, simplifying something, Tamara?
The farmers are Trump's people? I suppose they statistically, are the farmers Trump's people? I suppose they are. But I feel like they are facing other climate issues that may be sort of drawing their focus away from things that any repercussions that they may have of tariffs. might.
Right. Alicia, the idea that President Trump is going to, you know, take this money mm-hmm. from American importers and he's going to give it to farmers, to me that sounds like the redistribution of wealth, which yeah. I think is something that...
Which is why you have, like, hardline conservatives yeah. that are like, no, no,
yeah,
this is not okay.
And that's specifically why I put it that way. So yeah. What do you think the reaction is going to be if this is what actually comes to pass?
The hold your nose and vote thing that it is, I think, with a lot of Republicans and Trump, like they look at the overall thing instead mm-hmm. of the specificity of these issues that the GOP platform is allegedly against. But then we keep sending guys to Washington, D.C. that don't represent every bullet point of that same platform. And to answer your question that you tossed to Tamara, if I may, there are lots of farming groups that endorsed Donald Trump and did help him win mm-hmm. in middle America right. in 2016. And they tend to be kind of moderate, old-fashioned Democrat-type voters, which you also saw in a lot of those districts that are purple, that they were able to elect Democrats on the congressional level in those same type of farming-type districts, because there's this niche... I think in a good way, because I think that's the beauty of the House of Representatives, that they're supposed to be more in touch with their individual mm-hmm. constituents and individual districts. Those are going to be the people yep. that I think Trump has to worry about in 2020 against whoever out of these 25,000 Democratic candidates comes through. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's part of why he's saying, I'm going to take it from the bad guys because they're parts of the swamp, and I'm going to give it to the little guy over here. And he's thinking long term of how this is going to help him in his reelection campaign.
You know, and you mentioned it in passing, there is a new entry into the field. I believe his name is Sears Roebuck, something very close to that. So good for it. Congratulations. This is not something I was planning on talking about, but I heard that if there get to be a couple... Is that my computer? Oh, my God. I'm the worst with the pop-up ads. But, you know, we've already sold, I think a lot
you said Sears, and that was that Facebook listening, right?
And to be fair, we've sold a lot of tacos for Del Taco tonight, so mm-hmm. we might as well just get the commercials in there. I saw recently that if a few more candidates qualify for those Democratic debates, I don't know, I guess they're going to have to do coin tosses or something like that, and I'm only, like, half-joking... that not everybody gets to be a part of
well,
it.
Well, they are going to yeah. create more requirements that they have to meet in
is
order
it
to
like
get
the
on the debate
polling?
Stage. 1%
yeah.
is what
yeah.
I understand it has to be.
But that's if what the GOP did in 2008 and in 2012.
Right, and even so, there yeah. were, what were there, 16, I think, in some of the early debates in 2016.
We made fun of ourselves back then. Y'all are going to be really fun to make fun of.
Well, I mean, I don't
know
what you're
going to... There are so many people. I actually don't even know that I could name them all.
I can't name
them
all.
And I work in the new, like, conservative yeah. news every single day.
I don't know if this room full of people could come up with all of them.
Oh, that could be a fun game.
That could be a fun game. Now, can we get all 22?
We only have 12 minutes. Here's the thing. We wouldn't get it in 12 minutes.
But can you say Pete...
Buttigieg.
Yeah. Well, I've heard Buttigieg.
Yeah.
Like Buddha.
See, that's
edge.
The problem. That's why he's like, yeah, Mayor Pete. But eventually,
Klobuchar,
you do
Chelsea
need to learn.
Me.
You do have to learn these names if you're going to yeah. actually vote for them at some point.
And
but
it's
yeah.
Kamala. It's
yes.
not Kamala.
Yes.
It is Kamala. And yeah. I know that because, you know, she's our senator. But
so yeah. that's three. We've got Governor
we
Montana.
We can't leave this room until we get them all.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Are we allowed to Google? Or?
No. I think that would be cheating.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were talking about Lindsey Graham
We're
before.
Nothing if not bar trivia.
Yeah.
Trump Report.
I mean, that would be fun. Mm-hmm. Do a whole bar trivia installment.
I'll do that after I have the baby. So
yeah.
That
yes,
so
you can join.
Game,
yes.
And then it'll be more interesting.
All right, that's fair. Yeah.
Yes.
Lindsey Graham was trending on Twitter. He must have been excited about that. It was the hashtag, Lindsey Graham resign. That was earlier today after the Senate Judiciary Committee encouraged President Trump's son, that's Donnie Jr., not Eric, to plead the fifth and not answer questions. And I think that I'm probably just very naive. And I feel like if you don't do anything wrong and you believe you didn't do anything wrong and somebody wants to ask you questions, you should go answer them. But Chelsea, I'm not a lawyer. Even if you didn't do anything wrong, is it maybe sometimes still smart? And I know you're not a Don Jr. or Senior fan. or misses. But still, is it not smart to answer questions unless you absolutely have to because of just how your answers can be perceived?
When I came out of law school, I was like, oh, never talk to the police. And then as time went on, I'm like, that's dumb. So I can't even remember what it was that made me be like, oh, yeah, you just should never talk to them. Probably the case law that you read.
But you always watched Law and Order once. That's probably why.
You always get the extreme cases in school. But the bigger, he can plead the fifth, sure. But to suggest, to advise Don Jr. not to show up at all, to essentially ignore the subpoena, to minimize the oversight responsibility that Congress has is just not a good look. It's not a good look for democracy. It's not a good look for, you know, how we're supposed to have co-equal branches of mm-hmm. government. To say it's not a good look is kind of trivializing it. I think it is a big deal when you have a senator encouraging somebody to ignore a subpoena.
Well, and in terms of ignoring the subpoena, Tamara, does it hurt that he literally has the same name as the president? You know, I mean, I think that, you know, it's just bad for the optics, I think. It's like, you're also Donald Trump, you know, and you're like, yeah, I'm definitely not talking to anyone. Do you think that has any more weight, that he has the same name and he's his kid?
What?
I don't know. I was just asking you a question. Yeah. Do you think he knows what it means to take the fifth? Do you think he went to the minibar and looked for Johnny Walker?
He probably needed to hear that from Lindsey Graham because he probably, I don't know, didn't know that he has that option, I guess. But
his attorneys have negotiated the deal for him to go up on the Hill. He's not going to go in totally blindsided.
Right. Now they're doing a private meeting. So, I mean, public.
Just the optics of a senator saying, don't show, I mean, that it, for this country that's supposed to be, you know, law and order, and especially for conservative to be, you know, the party supposedly of law and order and following the Constitution. Come on, the Constitution. Follow the letter of the law and the Constitution.
And then for them
to be silent on this is just, you know, mind-boggling to me. Because, again, we are supposed to have co-equal branches of government per the Constitution. That's not per any supreme judicial activist on the Supreme Court saying that. It's what's in the Constitution.
Scott, we know you're very active on Twitter, and often we talk about your interesting back and forth with Mitch McConnell. And
oh, I'm going to go follow you.
Who else do you talk to?
Well,
does he ever reply?
No. But I'm hoping his social media will reply.
Cocaine Mitch doesn't have time to reply
to
you.
It's just insane.
But my question about you being active on Twitter, did you use the hashtag Lindsey Graham resign earlier today?
I did not, no. But
that doesn't seem like you. I figured you would have found a way to tweet about something else and be like, oh, and by the way, hashtag Lindsey Graham resign.
But yeah, exactly, and just throw it in there. But yeah. But you know, honestly, kind of going back to what Chelsea was saying, but the importance of having this separation of the co-equal branches is that at some point, when the tables are turned the other direction, we're just setting a bad precedence, which we talked about before, you know, when Harry Reid first opened the door with the Senate rule changes that then Mitch McConnell took to another level. And now you see that with Donald Trump with the presidency and the executive branch is like, now what are Democrats going to do when it's turned and when Republicans are controlling the House and telling a Democratic president, you know, they want to be subpoenaed for all these different things in their administration. And so it just sets that tone now for future presidents and the executive branch, and it's just a dangerous precedence that we're going down a road that we, you know, would hopefully not be doing. But and that's what I think about, is just the rules that we've always had, and sort of that decorum that we've always had is going by the wayside, and it started in the Senate and now it's moving over to the presidency, and it's, you know,
doing away with decorum is one thing. Doing away with the Constitution is kind of another.
But the argument that you're making,
Chelsea, is an argument that Republicans were making during the Obama administration. I mean, I think what Scott is more eloquently saying than I'm about to is shoe meet other foot. That this is something that it should be concerning to all Americans across the aisle, right, how people on both sides of the aisle are behaving, because it tends to be that whatever party is in power does what's best for them and their party versus adhering to those co-equal branches of government and adhering to the principles of the Constitution.
Well, I mean, we can't go backwards in time. I mean, we're talking right now about this specific, you know, incident. And so what never, you know, helps, I see, is like, well, this person did it too. And I mean, it, we go back to sort of the playground of who did it first. And I kind of feel like, you know, the annoying mom right here is, I don't care who started it, I'm ending it, you know. And I think that that's, somebody has to be the grown up and say, okay, enough. I can maybe get away with it because the people before me have, but it's the wrong thing to do.
Well, I think it's also people before, but I feel like it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And now social media is amplifying it in the background and people get frothed up and, you know, it gets more and more extreme. And so it started, but it's continued to get worse and worse. And so it's kind of like, where is that going to end?
Can I just have an example? Somebody, all of you can throw out examples of in the Obama administration when Democratic congressmen would be suggesting things that go against the Constitution?
Joe Biden, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi.
Well, those are names.
I could go back and list numerous examples during the Benghazi during the Benghazi investigation, during the IRS investigation, when they said that they had no right to pull in people from the IRS offices or other executive branch members. Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch were told by Democrats, you don't need to come up here, it's a dog and pony show. I can't remember specific congressmen and senators that said that, but it was people that you would recognize if I like picked up my phone and Googled them. It's something that, because they did it, our side can do it now. I don't like that argument either. I'm just saying that typically history does set a precedent, and the people in power, like Scott was saying, are like, well, the other guy did it, so I'm in power now, and I'm going
to keep doing asking
it.
To make sure that they're equally
consequential,
but also equally.
But what you might think is consequential is something that I might, or people on the right might not think is as consequential.
I guess I'm saying, I'm wondering if was there like an obscure representative that nobody had ever heard of suggesting we shouldn't bring in these any representatives from the IRS during the Benghazi here. Versus Mitch McConnell or saying,
people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, who are names that we've already mentioned on other issues that are still in leadership.
So what exactly had, I mean, I don't want to waste too much time on this, but
we've sort of characterized what they were talking about. I think we've gotten an example.
To me, it doesn't seem equal grounds.
This isn't what I was planning to talk about, but I specifically want to ask you, Alicia, is because this has come up a few times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you talk about the sort of like, oh, if it happens to us, we feel differently. Do you think, this is a very hypothetical, I'm not talking about 2020, if there's a presidential election where Democrats win the popular vote and finally, it's the reverse, where Democrats get the Electoral College and then the Republicans are finally like, hey, wait a minute. Do you think that there would actually be a conversation if it happens to both parties?
No.
Because I was just wondering what you thought.
I think that if it happens in 2020, which I don't think it's going to, but if it were to happen in 2020, you always have the diehard, hardcore Donald Trump can never do anything wrong people that would use that argument. But I think that the majority of conservative media and conservative politicians, even the Republican Party, would be like, okay, we lost.
Yeah. And to be fair, it's like they're just, it sometimes gets thrown out. It's not like everyone on the left is saying that we should abolish the Electoral College.
I would love to talk about Elizabeth Warren if we have a chance.
I just want to know what you guys think about like superdelegates and stuff.
I mean, I feel like that's
wondering if Democrats are going to go to a brokered convention.
Well,
it's going to be interesting.
I mean, Chelsea, when we did this show as Trump versus Hillary, you were obviously a very vocal Bernie supporter, and you obviously still like Bernie. But I mean, there's a lot of indications that that nomination was stolen from Bernie. I mean, I'm sort of like soft selling it, but so do you think that the system is fair, or is it going to be, if they decide, I'm just going to say Joe Biden, but if they decide one candidate is like, well, this is who we have to go with, they're going to make sure that they rig the system and that's who gets through, and it doesn't matter who people vote for in the primaries?
Well, there were supposed to be changes after the last time, and I remember
the
that
National
there were
League
some
is supposed to have the designated hitter now too, but you know, if the things don't happen, that's for you, Tim.
I don't know. That's one of the fewer things that I care to discuss, which for me, what's more important, because if the public opinion, public support for any candidate is too strong, and then the superdelegates go in another direction, that's just going to be a mess for the DNC. So they're already sort of skating on thin ice with their own party. So I mean, I hope things turn out more fair, but I don't know. What I think is most important now is that people get a chance to be heard, and that people like Elizabeth Warren get to choose or not choose not to go on platforms like Fox News. And I think it was I'm like, good for her to take the stand that she did and not show up.
I mean, if she doesn't want to, well, we only have a minute. So the thing that I want to say about that is, Elizabeth Warren going on Fox News, you're going to be exposed to an audience that has a preconceived impression of you. There are going to be a lot of people that don't vote for you that might tune in. You might actually convince people to vote for
you. That was Bernie Sanders' argument.
Right. I said on the show, I thought it was great that Bernie was smart enough to go on there. And then, of course, I don't know how many, you know, how many conservatives you heard saying this. They felt like it was Bret Baier and Martha McCallum, I think, that they were a little easy on Bernie. Was that? I know we're in limited time.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, well, I
mean, if anything, I think that Bret Baier is the most balanced. Like, Bret Baier and Jake Tapper are up there as my two favorite actual news anchors that seem to be unbiased and do a very good job.
Yeah, I think when you're somebody like Bret Baier, and if you ask unfair questions to anybody, regardless of what little letter in parentheses is next to their name, I think you're doing your job.
I also think that, you know, Elizabeth Warren said she didn't want to make Fox News money. I mean, it's a play. It's a play to her base, right?
Mm-hmm.
She also said that they were conspiratorial and racist. And I was like, for a really long time, you could have made the same argument specifically with relation to anti-Semitism about Al Sharpton being given a show by MSNBC for years.
Yeah,
but she had no problem going on MSNBC with the conspiratorial racist.
Well, right. Scott, I know you want to get something
in. No, just two quick things.
Yeah.
One is, yes, back to the DNC thing, I would like to see it be fair and better.
There's no time for changes before next year.
Well, I was going to say, I think they've already worked on the superdelegates thing, and it is going to be different than it was in 16. But I'll say, you know, going back to before, party bosses picked their leaders anyways, and it had nothing to do with voters and primaries. And so, you know, it's people forget that this is not a general election, and sometimes parties, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but parties influence who they want to be, who they think is the most electable, and that's been going on since the beginning of the Republic. Second thing is, I understand where Elizabeth Warren is coming from, and also appealing to her base like Trump does, but I think she's missing a good opportunity to get out in front of potential voters that might be open, that are not hugely supportive of Trump and might have been open to some of her things and agree to some of her things. Like, I think if you can get out there to Fox and get a bigger audience, it only helps you. And I mean, yes, I get where she's coming from.
I mean, I talk to enough people on the right that Fox isn't what it used to be for them, you know?
Especially if you speak to younger, if you speak to Gen Z and millennial conservatives, Fox News is not where they get their news. It's where our grandparents get their news.
Right, and my boss, Dennis Miller, for a while, he had a weekly spot on Fox News, but he doesn't actually like the overall tone of the channel, so he tends to get his news other places. So that's sort of my direct contact in that area, because we'll also get calls and voicemails from people who kind of agree with him. So I know we went a little long. I'm sorry, Brianna. I'm surprised that we're not getting a flashing
message.
You
can blame it on me.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to blame it on the baby.
Sure.
Yeah. So I don't know why that's seemed funny. It's just like, why not?
Well, because you can't be mad at a baby.
No.
And
no,
also,
it's
thank
impossible.
You for calling it a baby.
I have two. I'm mad at them sometimes. Oh, yes, of course. I see what you're saying. Which we definitely don't have time for that conversation. But maybe next time. Wait, you're doing July.
July.
All right, so we're going to have to get you back soon, I guess, is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks so much. Alicia, where do people find you online?
DailyWire.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Alicia Krauss.
And I am Christian Butt. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. We talked a lot about Russia today. You can find me tonight at 9 p.m. on the Chernobyl After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Chelsea, where do people find you?
At Chelsea Galicia.
Tamara.
Hey, Tamara _.
And Scott.
Twitter, SMan80.
Look at him argue with Mitch McConnell. And I want to see that.
One-sided.
I want to see that. Yeah.
Okay, I'll do that later.
Anyway, thanks again. And we will see everybody back here Tuesday at 4 Pacific. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz. Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.